Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
Most of them, at least, here on the podcast are courtesy of my SiriusXM show On Volume, which is heard every day live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time on Channel 106, replaying every night 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern and on demand on the SiriusXM app. Get a little taste of what goes on there here on this podcast, but I urge you to join me and listen live every day. Get involved, call in, and come on board if you are not already on the Daily Show On Volume. So I'll see you out there about on the road. I'm going to be all over the place, as I just mentioned. Follow on social media to keep up. If you're going to the Hair Nation tour, I'll see you in Vegas. I'll see you in Phoenix, Anaheim, Los Angeles. And later on in the tour, I'll see you at the stop in Houston. Bunch of other stuff going on. It's on the homepage of my website, eddietrunk.com. So let's hit our break here and come back and spend some time talking with Wolf Hoffman of Accept on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey guys, and I know there's a lot of guys in my audience. Are you looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Well, get to BlueChew.com. That's BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. Check this out. They've got the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so they work. And since they're chewable, they will work faster than a pill. And you can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And this stuff is cheaper than those other two, so this really is a no-brainer. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in the pharmacy line, because Blue Chew ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. And the deal gets even better for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use promo code TRUNK, T-R-U-N-K. Just pay $5 for shipping. Again, that's BlueChew, BlueChew.com, promo code TRUNK. BlueChew.com, promo code TRUNK. First shipment free. Just pay the $5 for shipping. Give it a try. BlueChew.com. Use promo code TRUNK.
Hi, this is Jeff Risden, and you are listening to Real GM Football Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Twice a week, we will bring you analysis of what happened in the NFL and what's going to happen next. We have a wide range of special guests lined up, from former NFL players to draft analysts that you recognize, former officials, and even some guest prognosticators to help pick some games. It's going to be a lot of fun to bring this to you twice a week. You can get Real GM Football Radio every Tuesday and Friday on the Podcast One Sportsnet or wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Hey, if you guys like this show, you need to check out CarCast. Hey, welcome back. It's Eddie Trunk, and now we get to our interview. And this week, it's with Wolf Hoffman of Accept. Enjoy. Wolf, how are you, man?
Eddie, how's it going?
Good. Excellent. Been a while. How's things in your world? Everything good?
Yeah, man. Everything is rocking. Rocking. We're ready to hit the road again. We've actually been busy this year. Hell, we've been busy the last 10 years.
Ever since you got that Tornillo guy in your band, you've been going nonstop.
I know. Remember that day when we came to your show? That's like, what, almost 10 years ago now, it seems like.
I remember Mark, for people that don't know, of course, Mark Tornillo has been the singer in Accept now, as Wolf says, for about 10 years. And Mark and I have known each other, gosh, for well over 35 years, probably, being both Jersey guys. But I remember Mark, I will never forget Mark calling me and saying, so I got to come over. I said, what's up? He comes over, comes down into my office. He goes, I want to play you something. And what is this? He goes, this is me singing in Accept. I said, what? You're an electrician. What are you doing singing in Accept? And that was, of course, the first album, which is, I think, now that you made with Mark, which I think is now a classic, a modern classic, of course. And, yeah, you blink your eyes, and it's almost 10 years, right?
Crazy. As a matter of fact, I was just sitting here going through some older songs for a new set list, and I heard some of the old tracks from Blood of the Nation, some of the stuff that I haven't heard in years, and I was actually thinking, gosh, this is really good.
Well, you guys are in you have a good problem, because now you've got this catalog of records with Mark, which of course started with Blood of the Nations, and then of course all the old stuff like Metal Heart, which I just played. So I imagine when you do go out and play, as you've been doing all over the world, it's getting harder and harder to make everybody happy with the set.
Yeah, but you know, after a while you realize you can't make everybody happy, so you go... I try to please the majority of the people. I mean, there's always the obscure fan that wants to hear obscure, deep album cuts. And, you know, you got to say, man, if we play that song, it's going to please you. But what about the rest of the people? Not everybody knows everything. So you got to, once in a while, we throw some stuff in that we haven't played so often. But, you know, yeah. But I think you said it. We have a luxury problem here. We have so many songs to choose from. It's really great.
You know, I just had a conversation with one of my callers on the radio show exactly about this point, Wolf, where you have that fan, that segment of your fan base that knows every song you ever made. And when you go out and you play live, they want to hear a different set all the time. Every night they want to see things changing. But then you as an artist, you don't want to lose the audience, because you know when you do some of that stuff, it takes the steam out of the crowd. So it is really a balancing act, right?
It totally is, and it's not like we haven't tried it. I mean, we've tried to play songs that, oh, yeah, sounds like a great idea, and then you go out and you play it at a certain spot in the show, and you just feel the crowd go, you know, and you figure, like, okay, that didn't work so well. Let's stick with the stuff that the majority of the people know, because that's what it's all about. You know, if you lose the momentum, then that's no good. You know, maybe you're pleased that those few super fans that know everything, but, you know, that's not what it's all about.
Well, I was thinking about it. For a band like Accept, I mean, you guys were never built on hits. You're not a radio band per se, where you've got, you know, like Def Leppard has like 10 radio hits. People know, if they know the best known Accept song, I would think would be Balls to the Wall. Would you agree with that?
Probably, yeah. Oh, yeah, it has to be. Mm-hmm. So, maybe Fast as a Shark is a second. I don't know, but, you know.
So when I look at it, like, tell me if I'm wrong, but as far as songs that you probably have had to play ever since the records were originally released, what would you say would be probably Balls to the Wall, Metal Heart, Fast as a Shark?
Princes of the Dawn. That's probably the one. Those are the four that I can think of right now that we always play, I think.
Midnight Mover?
Nah, sometimes, not always. But, yeah, it's here in the U.S., it's better known than in some of the other parts of the world.
Now,
it's in the set list right now, but there's been times where we didn't play it. Yeah.
Now, you, as the guy who wrote or co-wrote these songs and recorded them and had been playing them for 40 years or whatever it's been on stage, be honest with me. Does it get boring ever? Would you wish you could drop them, or you know you can't and you just have to deal with it? Or do you find ways to make them exciting every night after playing them for 40 years?
Hell no, they're never boring. I mean, I get this question all the time, because people think just because I've played them a million times, that would get bored. But I tell you, as soon as the audience reacts the way they do, even a song like Princes of the Dawn, which is so simple, and I got to admit, it's no fun to rehearse that without the audience. It's kind of, you know, it's just so simple. It's not very challenging. But as soon as the audience gets into it and they sing along and they react to it, it's one of the funnest songs we have. So I wouldn't, you know, trade it for anything. I'm glad we have those songs that we've played so many times, because they get the best reaction, and, you know, they're like the building blocks of the show.
Did you know, for instance, if you take Metal Heart, if you take Balls to the Wall, Restless and Wild, or Fast as a Shark, Metal Heart, Balls to the Wall, Princess of the Dawn, when you wrote those songs and recorded them initially, was there any feeling in you that they would become signature songs all these years later? Did you know that? Did you feel you were creating something that was going to be these sort of signature songs for Accept? Or did they just feel like any other song from those records?
Yes and no. Some of them felt a little special. I remember Balls to the Wall, when I wrote that riff and I was bringing it to the guys, I thought, That felt so easy. I mean, it came together so fast and so quickly that we all felt like, does this song exist? We knew it wasn't a struggle to write it, and it felt so natural, and it just fell in place so easily that we all had the suspicion we might be fooling ourselves and it's actually a cover song or something. And so that was special. But some other times, like Prince of the Dawn, we were just sort of messing around in the studio and experimenting a little bit and this and that, and nobody had any idea that it would turn into a so-called classic. And the same with Fast as a Shark. No, man, we were just, back in those days, just doing what felt natural. And, you know, later on, then it sort of developed from there. But at the time, no, it was just another song when it happened.
And there are some people, and I'm sure you've heard this, that feel that Fast as a Shark was kind of like one of the songs that was the precursor to thrash, that the double bass and the speed of that song really laid the groundwork for what would become thrash metal. What were you listening to at that time? Was that a conscious thing at the time to make something that fast and heavy? Were you trying to up the ante over other bands that were happening at the time? And what was your thought when you were making that?
Not really. I mean, where we come from, and I think speak for everybody who was back in the band then, it's like more like hard rock. I mean, Deep Purple was a huge influence, and AC/DC and Judas Priest, but we weren't really thinking about thrash or any of that stuff. It was just one of those songs where we had the attitude, you know, let's not try to make anything commercial. Let's just try to have fun. And I remember the drummer came up with the idea of writing a song, you know, just double kick all the way through. And so we went with it, and that song sort of developed over, I don't know, a few days or weeks. And at the time, we just thought, you know, we know it's not going to be a radio song or anything, but what the hell, at least we're having fun. So, but at that point, you know, we didn't get this huge immediate reaction that you get nowadays. When you release something, you know within, heck, a couple of hours whether it's going to be a success or not, or 2 days. Back then, we just released it, and it sort of developed very, very slowly back. I remember that.
Yeah, it's really, I'm sure you, when you guys were getting Accept together back in the day in Germany, I'm sure that there was no thought in your mind that in 2018 you'd be touring and still talking about these songs, right?
Hell no. We always thought, and I always thought, one day you've got to wake up and get a real job and do something proper and forget about this whole nonsense. Because you have to remember, I mean, I keep saying this to people, when we started and when I joined Accept, the Stones were like, I don't know, in their 20s or maybe in their early 30s maybe. So everybody was young back then. It was just incredible. There was nobody who was like 40 or 50 or 60 making rock music or heavy rock or any of that, or professional musicians as a career. That whole idea was just virtually unknown. You know, everybody always thought like, well, you can't do this when you're past 30. Forget
right.
40.
That's a good point, yeah.
Everybody thought it's a young man's game, and even the Beatles or the Stones, you know, they have to get it. You know, they can't do this forever, you know. But guess what? They can. And we're still here.
Yeah, it is. That's a great point. I forget about that. People forget that there was a time where your expiration date, if you're going to play rock, was like 35, 40 years old. Now you've got guys
40,
70
yeah,
out
40
there.
40 was even unthinkable. Yeah. I know it. I mean, it was all just starting back there, the whole, I guess, music scene and rock in general. You know, it's crazy. It's still so young. I mean, it was. Now it's, of course, everything is 40, 50 years ago now. But back then it was all in its infancy. It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I want to talk. We're going to talk about your upcoming tour dates and, of course, talk about what's going on now with Accept. But just a few more things on the past. Do you think, like, you know, we talked about Mark coming into the band and finding him, 10 years or so now. I mean, I guess that really was a godsend for you guys, because if you didn't find a guy like that, it's such a tough gig to be able to do the old material justice and write great new stuff. And I would imagine we might not be talking right now, and there wouldn't be an Accept right now if you wouldn't have found a guy like that, right?
That's right. And we had practically given up. We thought we didn't even look for anybody. He just sort of walked into our life, and that sparked the whole reunion and the whole starting the machine back up again. But, you know, we didn't think there was anybody out there who could do that, and we had practically given up on the whole idea. And then all of a sudden, here's Mark, and that makes Peter and I go like, man, you want to start the band again? Should we make records again and do all that? And hell yeah, we did. So we wouldn't be talking if we wouldn't have run into Mark.
Was there any hesitation, Wolf? Because you had tried it with another singer without Udo. You tried it with David Reese, who was also American, and that didn't work quite as well. So were you a little gun shy about it at the time, saying, do we really want to try this again?
Absolutely. Absolutely were we gun shy. And we were, you know, we knew it was going to be tough. We knew people would be, you know, very skeptical. And we were right, they were very skeptical. But then we thought, you know, what we feel right now at this very moment when we met Mark there in that infamous jam session, other people have to feel the same thing, or it's too good to be true, and it has to work. And we basically said to ourselves, man, if this doesn't work, I mean, we just give up. We're going to give it all we've got one more time, and we make records, we go on tour, but this just feels too good to be true. It has to work. And by God, it did.
And for those that don't know, you were working before the band reformed as a photographer, right?
Correct. Yeah, yeah. We were all basically living a civilian life, you know, doing other stuff. And I was a photographer indeed. Yes, sir. I was still playing guitar here and there, but not professionally. And the band was pretty much dormant or non-existent at that point, you know. And then here's Mark, and we do this jam session, and we decide, let's start the band again.
And for those that don't know, Wolf does commercial photography. Do you still do it, Wolf? Are you still doing it in your spare time?
No time anymore, man. No, I came full circle, and I'm a full-time musician again for the last, I don't know, 5 years maybe.
You
miss
it? I
tried to do it parallel there for a little while, but it was just the touring was getting so intense, and, you know, I can't do everything, so I decided, you know, music has always been number one. Photography is nice, but, you know, hey, I'd rather be on stage playing Fast as a Shark, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, of course. But and for the type of photography you did was commercial photography, but do you take a camera on the road? Are you somebody that, since you travel all over the world, that you like to shoot other stuff while you're out there just for fun as well?
I do, but I don't really want to carry all that camera gear anymore. I have to admit, I take pictures with my iPhone just like everybody else. It's just because it's such a hassle to carry that stuff with you at all times. And, you know, when you take photo gear with you, invariably when you come to a moment that you really need to shoot, the camera is in the hotel room and you don't have it. So I take the iPhone. It's always with me.
and let me ask you this. What are your thoughts? You know, for the last few years, Udo's been going out playing Accept songs and full sets of Accept music, where for a while he distanced himself from it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I have lots of thoughts about that, but I'm not going to share them with you. I'd rather not comment on that, you know, because that's been so much back and forth, and I think I should stay away from it.
Well, you not commenting on it just says a world about it right then and there, obviously.
No, you can draw your own conclusion all day long, but I'm not going to get into it, man. It's just not worth it.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you know that he went to an Accept show with the current lineup? Did you know that?
I did know it. I think a few years ago he did. I don't know recently, but...
No, he told me that on this show, that he came to see Accept and stood in the back and watched the band with Mark.
Why not? Okay, fine.
You guys had no idea while you were playing that he was there, I guess.
No.
I found that really fascinating that he would do that, but he said he was just curious to check it out.
Yeah, well, why not, man?
Suffice it to say, there's no time that Wolf Hoffman's going to be at an Udo show anytime soon, right?
Yeah, like I said, I'd rather not get into the whole Udo thing. You know, it's just been, I get asked so many times, and man, it's been so many years. It's such an old story by now. I mean, we've moved on way past that. And like I said, we've had 10 brilliant years. We're making cool albums. I think we're doing fine. So I don't spend any time thinking about it.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody for a minute doesn't think that. But obviously, a big part of the material that you do still play was you know, he was a part of the band then. So I think that's why it comes up. So
I'm very proud of the history we have together and all that. But I'm just not going to get into the current he said, she said, whatever. You know, it's not worth it.
Well, let's talk about the current with what Accept has going on now. So what if you have dates coming up here in America, a handful of shows that are, and then you go over, is it to Mexico or other parts of the world? Tell me what's coming up.
Well, yeah, we're going to do 6 shows in the U.S. starting in on the, starting in Chicago, actually. Then we're going to do 3 shows in California and then a little bit of Texas and then Mexico and then all kinds of crazy countries in South America like Brazil, Argentina, Chile and all that. And then we're actually finishing up in Germany. We're doing some shows in Germany. So I'm quite excited. It's going to be quite a whirlwind round trip again.
Coming right back with more with Wolf Hoffman of Accept on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, if you guys are looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP, and you might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the ones you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for that same car you want, and your certified dealers know this. So they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or a used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
We're back with more with Wolf Hoffman of Accept on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. Well, the dates here in the U.S., since we're broadcasting to the U.S., we should mention you're September 26th, you're in Illinois, as you mentioned, St. Charles at the Arcata. Here, that's a great theater. I haven't been there yet. 28th, you're at the Canyon Club, Agora Hills. 29th, Pasadena at the Rose. The 30th, Santa Clarita. And October 2nd, Gas Monkey in Dallas. October 4th, White Oak Music Hall in Houston. I have been there. That's a great venue. That'd be a lot of fun to see the band there. So those are the U.S. shows. And then you talk about going outside, the stuff you're going to do outside of the world or outside of America. Where for you, Wolf, these days for Accept, where is the biggest audience for the band? When you go back to Germany, does it feel like a homecoming? Is that where your biggest base is?
Yeah, I would probably have to say yes. Because we're from there, we tour there a lot, and I mean, yeah, I think that's probably the biggest crowds we have are over there. But man, South America is a second, and I mean, Russia is really strong. We have places all over the world where we're doing fine. I wish the U.S. were doing a little better because I mean, it's metal in the U.S. is sort of a little bit dormant right now. I mean, but you know, there's still fans out there, lots of them really, but it's just the touring. It's just better for us overseas, unfortunately.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, I wouldn't say unfortunately. We're very fortunate to have these markets all over the world. I just wish there was more going on in the U.S. I mean, we have all these amazing festivals, for instance, in Europe, and just now there's more and more festivals coming up in the U.S. So, but, you know, still, it's U.S. used to be the golden era. It was maybe in the 80s, I thought.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think, unfortunately, mainstream radio doesn't really touch heavy music anymore. And
yeah.
I think you would know this better than anybody. I mean, a big reason why Accept got on the radar here in America was because of MTV back in the day. And
yeah,
and you guys did so well with stuff like Midnight Mover and the Balls to the Wall video and all that. And obviously there's no big power like that anymore that could just really put a band on the map. So I think those things really come into play that, and you know, even now I think everybody's attention, Wolf, is so diverted. It was like, not to sound like the old man that I am, but it used to be back in the day, it was like a record came out, it was an event, and you waited. And
it was, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I remember those
now,
days.
Now it's like, well, click, oh, it's Friday, click here and you can hear something. It's just not the same relationship people have with the music. It kind of bums me out.
It does. And I'm trying not to sound like a bitter old man, but it's sort of, it's turned a little bit into that, where you wonder, like, was everything better back then, but I don't think it was. It was just a different, totally different landscape, you know.
Well, it was a different time, and you had to put more into wanting music. Like, even if you wanted a concert ticket, you wanted the best spot, right, you'd get to the ticket vendor the earliest and wait in line. You know, now it's not like that anymore. The passion and the demand and the how special and unique it is to get a record or get a ticket, it's now just not thought of like that anymore. There's just too many other distractions, I think, that people have. I don't know if it's better or worse. I think there's pros and cons to every scenario, but I see my own kids who are 11 and 14, and the relationship with music is totally different. It's like, oh, that's available now, I'll just click and listen on my phone. And it's different than actually going and buying and holding and going through the booklet. I mean, when I got records, I went through every page of the booklet, read every liner note, and I think a lot of that has been lost.
It is. It's just, but what are you going to do? I mean, what is the conclusion we can draw from it? I don't know. I've gave up wondering about it and just know, man, at least we're still out there. We're still kicking ass. We're having a fan base and we still tour the world. We make records, so I shouldn't be complaining. I think we're actually doing fine. I'm having a ball, but you know, if you think it all the way through, it is kind of sad, but I'm trying not to do that because, hey, man, it's no sense. You don't want to sound like, you know, like a guy who's always thinking about yesterday and thinking everything was better back then, because that doesn't get you anywhere either.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, like I said, there's definitely pros and cons to each situation as you look at it. One other thing, did I read that you guys recorded a record with a symphony?
We made a live concert in Wacken, Germany, at the biggest metal festival in the world. Last year in August, we recorded our show there. It was amazing, man. We had this 50-piece orchestra from Prague, and we played some songs from my solo album, Headbanger Symphony, for the first time live. And then as an extra bonus on top of that, we played some Accept songs with an orchestration, which was way cool. It was much better than I thought it was ever going to be, because you wouldn't really think of Accept's music with an orchestra per se, but man, when you hear it, it sounds killer. So we were all super excited to perform this for the very first time and live in front of so many people. So we recorded the whole thing, and it's going to come out as a DVD in about, I don't know, a couple of months, I think. And it's going to be called Symphonic Terror. So stay tuned for that.
Wow. So is it a full Accept set of, and then some, like how, what was the balance? Were you out there alone at one point with the orchestra? How did you break it up?
We actually had three parts to the show. It was kind of trippy, man. We started with some songs from the new album, Rise of Chaos, and some other Accept songs. So that was just the band only, Accept only. And then there was a short transition, and then, poof, there was the orchestra, and was just me playing some instrumental stuff from my solo album for about 30 minutes. And the last hour was Accept with the orchestra. So there's actually three parts to the show, and the whole thing was 2 hours.
Wow, and what Accept songs did you do that, what did you feel lent themselves best to having orchestration? Because you're right, I mean, I've seen bands, when metal bands do this, where it's worked, and sometimes where I felt it feels forced and awkward and doesn't work. So right. So for you, where did you feel it really worked best? What songs did you do?
I mean, we played them. I mean, even like Princes of the Dawn, Stalingrad, even a song like Breaker, it's killer with an orchestration. I think it's always it's how you do it. I mean, we were very careful in writing these orchestrations to give room for both the band and the orchestra because you're right, sometimes it feels they're fighting for attention or they're fighting almost against each other and like seeing who can win. But we tried to sort of be careful and mindful of that and really took our time to write the orchestration and do all that to where it gives the orchestra enough space and the band enough space. And I think in the end it worked really, really well. And a song like Shadow Soldiers, for instance, man, it's just killer. But we also did Even Fast as a Shark. You wouldn't think that would even work, but it did.
I'm just trying to figure out where the room is for an orchestra and Fast as a Shark.
Yeah, you'll watch it and you'll see it. It works, man. I'm super excited about it.
Oh, that's cool. You know, Alter Bridge just did that. They're the latest band to do that. They just did a show with the symphony at Royal Albert Hall, and they're about they put that out on Friday, and I love that band, and I listened to that as well. And for me, it's always like, I'm curious to see how it's going to work. And in their case, I thought they worked. I thought it worked. They pulled it off pretty well. But I'm sure it definitely is a different challenge for you guys up there to have. And well, I know you've always been a fan of classical music, and you've done those solo records. So for you, I'm sure it's something you always wanted to do, right?
Oh, absolutely. It was really a dream come true. In a way, I mean, I've waited all my life for this. I mean, I've always had this sort of fantasy of one day, wouldn't it be cool if we could play together with an orchestra? And I never really knew how it would sound, but man, when I heard it, it was just incredible. And I mean, yeah, I'm hooked now. I want more of that. So we're trying to go on the road with this setup for next year, and we've already booked shows for that, and you know, to do an indoor version of that same concert, and I think it's going to be pretty sweet.
So you think you could actually tour? Would you just pick up a different orchestra in each city? How would you do that? You wouldn't be able to tour with the same one, would you?
Yeah, sometimes if it's within like driving and trucking distance, yes. But of course, if you fly somewhere, you got to pick up a new orchestra. You wouldn't necessarily charter a whole plane full of orchestra musicians. But if it's like sort of driving distance, you would try to do the same. But actually, I'm talking as if I've already done it. We're currently just working exactly that out. I mean, I know we're going to be doing some shows in Russia, for instance, and we're going to fly there and use a Russian orchestra for those shows, but then everything else is still in the works. How we do it, it's just going to be tricky, man.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a cool challenge. And then one last thing, have you guys thought about, or have you been writing or considering the next record at all?
We've been considering it. That's as far as it has come. Considering it, but we haven't actually started anything. No, I've got to be honest. I mean, I laid down some ideas here and there, and it's the very first baby step. But man, we've been so busy touring and all that. We really, at some point, need to lock the doors and start working again. And it will happen maybe early next year or so.
Are you the kind of guy that's always writing, even on the road, or do you just have to dedicate time and sit down to do it, or is it always just an idea comes to you and then you go running to your recorder and knock it down?
I'm not writing on the road that much. Actually, funny enough, this last tour and a half, I've been starting to write a little bit here and there, but I'm more the guy who has to sit down and make time and just, you know, like I said, lock the doors, throw away the phone and force myself into it, then it starts happening.
Well, it's good catching up with you, man. It's been a little bit. Again, everybody check out Accept on the Road in the U.S. Again, the date's at acceptworldwide.com, but you're going to be in outside of Chicago, St. Charles. You'll be in Agora Hills, some West Coast stuff, the Pasadena, Santa Clarita, and then in Texas, Dallas, and Houston. The date's again at acceptworldwide.com for all the info and updates on what's going on with the band. And as somebody who's seen you guys a lot in recent years, especially since Mark has been there, I would encourage everybody to get out and go see these shows if they are coming anywhere near you, because you guys are still a powerful, powerful band. It's still amazing to watch you guys do what you do. And I'm sure you feel the same way. I mean, I'm sure you feel real good about how this band's sounding right now.
I think actually we're having a better time than ever. I mean, these last few years have been so consistent, and I think it's getting better and better. Better every year. I can't believe it. I mean, we're having a ball right now. We're on a roll.
And after all these decades, that's what's probably most important, to be having fun and enjoying it. I mean, nobody wants to be out there and be miserable and hating each other. To be able to go out there and have fun as well as play the songs that you created is got to be a big key.
It is definitely is. I mean, nobody would do this if we were not having fun, and you know, this is really what we want to do in life. And you know, like I said, nobody's forcing us to do this. We're really doing it because we want to, and because the audience loves it and we love it. And hey man, so we keep going.
Well, Wolf, I'm glad you are. Great to talk to you. Send my best to your wife, and good luck with these dates. If I'm anywhere in those cities when you're playing, I'll try to pop out and see you, but if not, I hope to see you soon.
See you soon, brother. Great talking with you. Great catching up.
You too, and I look forward to that symphony record. When it's out, we'll do something for that.
Yes, please.
All right, man. You got it. Take care.
Metal.
I'll see you, Wolf. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, my thanks to Wolf Hoffman of Accept for joining me on the Eddie Trunk podcast. Always great to talk to Wolf. Good to see the band doing so well. Look forward to that album with that symphony. That should be pretty darn cool. My thanks to Katie Irizarry. She is the producer of the Eddie Trunk podcast. I thank you for listening wherever, whenever, and however you do it. Be sure to follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. EddieTrunk.com is the official online home. And as I mentioned, I'm out there on the road often, so be sure to follow, and I'll keep you updated with everything I have going on, Twitter, where I am most active. And check out all the dates and all the appearances. Listen to me every day on Sirius XM Channel 106 Volume, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time live, replaying every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, on demand anytime you want on the Sirius XM app. And what else did I want to tell you? Something else. I forgot. Anyway, I'll remember. Next Thursday is another all new episode of the podcast. And I'll see you guys out there on the road. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you have a great week. Thanks for listening.
Season is here, and no one covers football like Podcast One Sportsnet. We've got you covered on a daily basis with Dan Patrick, Rich Eisen.
This might be just a walk in the park.
RJ Bell's Dream Preview, and Ross Tucker's Fantasy Feast Podcast.
They're just creating more work for me at this point.
We also have Jim Harbaugh with Attack Each Day and Revenge of the Jocks with Martellus Bennett.
Football is the ultimate soap opera.
So download all of these shows and more each week on PodcastOneSports.com.